Okay, this is the time set for argument in SFR versus Green Tree, case number 72010. And the allotment of time is a bit different. There's 20 minutes per side with 5 minutes to be taken by amicus on the respondent's side. And you may reserve any portion of your 20 minutes that you wish.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jacqueline Justices Pickering, Hardesty, Gibbons, Jacqueline Gilbert on behalf of SFR Investments Pool 1 LLC. With me also at the table is Diana Ebron and Athanasios Agalakopoulos. I'd like to reserve 8 minutes. Under no circumstances can this court affirm Green Tree violated the TRO and wrongfully foreclosed, but I think the main issue before the court today is that the agency had no property, so 4617J3 does not even apply. If you have no right, you have no remedy. And the agency concedes, and we agree with their concession, that state law defines property for purposes of 4617J3. Berezovsky recognized that in its citation to Erie. And under current binding Nevada law, there is no property at the time of the association that vested in the GSE and therefore in the agency. So let's take a look at what Nevada law is as to property rights, real property rights. Under Edelstein, this court recognized that there's two distinct and separate instruments, and they carry with them two distinct and separate rights. The note holder has no right, their right to repayment, but no right to look to the property. The deed of trust holder has a security interest in the property and a right to the property, but no right to repayment. They have to be put together. There's no reason to foreclose if you don't have the right to repayment. Under Leyva, this court recognized that the transfer of those two instruments is done separately and distinctly. That a deed of trust is conveyed or assigned under real estate property conveyancing law. A note is under the UCC. That's what renders the UCC argument in their supplemental brief pretty much superfluous. It's unnecessary because this court has already determined that the UCC doesn't apply to a deed of trust. Under Edelstein, you also recognize that the two instruments can be completely separately disassociated. And they move forward separately with the different rights until there's a need to put them together if somebody chooses to put them together, for example, to foreclose. Under Monteith, which the agency wants you to expand. Monteith is a narrow exception to what the field is for property law in Nevada. The field is occupied by Edelstein and Leyva. Different instruments, different conveyancing, different rights can be held by two different entities. And when they're held by two different entities, they have those different rights. Monteith recognized a narrow exception under this umbrella of of what the law is. And it could recognize that it could constructively reunite the two instruments for the purpose of foreclosing in the bankruptcy instance, where the note holder had wanted to move forward with foreclosure. And the question there was, do we have to make the perfect assignment, or can we constructively reunite them? Again, in the context in that case. And what the court said is that they could constructively reunite them, not physically, but constructively reunite them, because the security interest attached and was perfected before the bankruptcy and separation of the note from the deed of trust did not alter the interest of the parties, creditor, debtor, in this instance, limiting it to the facts. And this court recognized that, that when you have different parties, you have different interests. And that was said at the very beginning of the analysis in Montague. It says that a security interest attaches to the property as between the mortgagor and mortgagee upon execution and against third parties upon recordation. That's consistent with Leyva. It's consistent with Edelstein. And they understand attachment. They use it five times in their UCC argument. They simply ignore the sentence in Montier. They ignore what attaches, what makes an interest in real property as to third parties. What they want you to do is take Montier and give them a property interest that does not exist and did not exist at the time of the foreclosure sale. They want you to expand the Montier because they know it, that under real property law, as it exists today, they lose. Because if you don't have property at the time of the foreclosure, preemption isn't even a question. You have to have a right before you can use a remedy. What happened in Berezovsky is they got the right choice of law, Nevada law. You apply Nevada law to determine property. What they
How
did
do you
was
distinguish Berezovsky?
Pardon me?
How do you distinguish Berezovsky?
I think Berezovsky got the law actually wrong. I think this is your chance to tell them about Montier. Berezovsky looked to Montier and said, well, there's a secured property interest, but those words aren't even used in Montier. They take some quotes out of Montier and they expand it and say, now we have property interest. But that's not true. They had to look to Nevada law to determine the property. Nevada law in this court, Montier, said there is no property that attaches. You can't attach and have a property interest unless you record. Edelstein recognized that. I think the difference there is that they took what was constructively done in the narrow sense of Montier and expanded it without actually looking at the true property law and the statutes and Edelstein and Leyva. And here's what's
what
really...
What do you do with the Christine View case? And I realize it was an unpublished disposition that was reissued as a published opinion, so it's not... it doesn't go in depth, but it does seem to me to endorse the Berezovsky approach. Factually, it seems to be quite close to this case.
It's there. The factual difference are, is a chasm, Your Honor.
I'm sorry?
The factual difference is a chasm. It's like having the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And first Christine View was who has standing to enforce. The second part of that, standing, being able to come in and say I have standing is one thing. Saying I have a property interest is another. But second, in Christine View, and without conceding that they had the actual note, etc., Christine View, Freddie's interest was actually recorded prior to the HOA sale. So the rights of a third party had not intervened.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's a huge difference in looking at it.
So there was no 106, 210?
There's no issue there.
Okay.
And I think Berezovsky, what they're asking you to do, they're doing it in Guberland, they're asking you to do is take Montier out of the mortgage or mortgagee context and say it applies to everything. What that does is requires you to do the following. Reject or overrule Edelstein. Two separate, distinct instruments that were taken apart. It requires you to undo Leyva, which says that the transfers are done differently because what they want is a traditional rule. Whoever owns the note has the property interest, or the interest in the property. They also would have you discard the recording statutes, the very foundation in this state of nonjudicial foreclosure. If a hidden interest can come in and raise some kind of defense or some kind of claim, some kind of a right in property, then you're doing away with nonjudicial foreclosure because all that matters is who has the note. And it doesn't matter if the interest is recorded. Because this isn't limited to where there's a deed of trust recorded. If all that matters is who owns the note to be able to assert the defense, then it doesn't matter. You have to take this to its logical conclusion. And they want to turn us into a traditional state, traditional rule state, which you rejected expressly, saying it doesn't go with Leyva, and it certainly isn't the policy in this state. And why isn't it? As you said in Edelstein, it's prudent to have the recorded beneficiary be the actual beneficiary and not just a shell for the true beneficiary. In Nevada, the purpose of recording a beneficial interest under a deed of trust is to provide constructive notice to all persons. To permit an entity that is not really the beneficiary to record itself as the beneficiary would defeat the purpose of the recording statute and encourage a lack of transparency.
What page are you reading from on?
That is on page 519 of Edelstein. Policy-wise, it doesn't make sense to extend this beyond the very narrow exception. It's an umbrella over what happened in Montier. It's an umbrella, and the umbrella doesn't have room for the third person. When the rights of a third person intervene, you have to look at what property does somebody have. And the agency doesn't get any more than the GSE would have had. And let's be clear, if any other note holder was in here saying, I don't have to record, I can just do what I want, you don't have to know who I am, they have a right. They don't have to record in their name. But they do so at their own peril. Because as soon as the rights of a third party intervene, you no longer have any property. Not because it was expunged or anything else. You have no property because it never attached, because it was not recorded. So let's talk about what happens if you extend. Justice Gibbons, there will be no more, ever, title insurance. And the reason for that is you can no longer rely on the recording statutes. I mean, the record. And a title insurer decides what its risk is by looking at the records. You have a 107 sale, and there is a second deed of trust. I can't insure that, because they could come back and say that second deed of trust was under Fannie. And to be clear, this is not some hypothetical that I'm throwing at you. You can look at your own docket. Case number 76858, SFR versus Residential Credit Solutions. It's the second deed of trust that is claiming priority.
And Fannie Mae owns the second deed of trust in that case?
That's their claim, Your Honor.
So they're, well, we're not arguing that.
Not case. Arguing it. I'm just saying that in that case, that is the claim they're making.
So your point is that the position with respect to HOA liens is indistinguishable under the federal statute from the hypothetical of a Fannie Mae second deed of trust getting foreclosed out on a first deed of trust, and then them coming without having given prior notice to say, wait, our second deed of trust wasn't extinguished by virtue of the sale because of federal preemption bar. Is that right?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm
saying. I don't
want to talk
about that other
case,
but you're saying that's the hypothetical.
I say it doesn't stop at 116. It doesn't stop with lending. Somebody wants to lend. Where do they go to see if they're going to be protected if they want to take out a security interest or have security interest? They go to the recording statutes. That's where title goes.
But the deed of trust is recorded. The only issue is
really, it's 106.210 is the only statute anyone can point to for saying there needs to be recordation on the assignment. Isn't that fair or not?
I don't even believe that that's fair, Your Honor.
Okay.
But even to the extent that we're looking at 106.210, I don't think it's fair because intervening rights of third parties, everything we're talking
okay,
here.
I see.
But 106.210, here there's a claim that they didn't have to do it under the new statute, the 2011 statute. That's absolutely false. They recorded another interest after the sale. That's the one that had to be recorded. If Fannie Mae wanted to be the grantor and grantee and be the beneficiary under the deed of trust for that sale, it had to be recorded. Otherwise, it doesn't get to be the grantor or the grantee. It had no interest on the day of
the
sale.
Well, the recording, it's the 2011 version forward that requires the recordation. The other one was permissive, the earlier one, right?
Right. I'm saying under the new one, it had to be there. Otherwise, they could not make the second assignment, which was a rogue assignment anyway, because on the day that they made the assignment and executed it, there was no longer a deed of trust. It had been foreclosed out the day before. And hadn't had one anyway because they had no property interest at the HOA sale. With that, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, Your Honor, unless you have a question.
Good morning, Justices, and may it please the Court. Andrew Jacobs of Snell & Wilmer with Kelly Dove of Snell & Wilmer for the respondents Fannie Mae and Ditech Green Tree Servicing. I guess I'll proceed first, if I may, to Monteith, which seems to be somewhat at the heart of the briefing and the discussion. Counsel was just explaining to the Court SFR's view that there is no secured interest discussed in Monteith. And that's entirely incorrect. At page 653, at the end of the Monteith decision, an en banc decision of this Court, it states, accordingly, we answer the bankruptcy court's first question by concluding that Deutsche Bank's interest was secured at the time of the filing of the bankruptcy. And that's why their brief just misreads and fairly tortures Monteith. At the end of Monteith, you explain, the Nevada Supreme Court explains to us, the interest was secured at the time of the filing of the bankruptcy. Then you go back to the start of Monteith, and you look at the chronology of what happened there, and it says after the Monteiths filed for bankruptcy, after that, MERS assigned its interest in the deed of trust to Deutsche Bank, and the assignment was not recorded until a month after that. So all that time in Monteith, before there is a foreclosure sale, before the assignment is recorded, there already is a secured interest in property, and that is the important part of Monteith. That interest is secured. That interest was already secured here by virtue of Fannie's ownership interest. And they talked for 12 minutes about the law because there are no facts here which tend to be supportive of their position. The evidence, which was competent and proved up properly before the district court in this matter, the evidence submitted was both deposition testimony and authenticated business records of Fannie Mae. And those pieces of evidence that came before the court were entirely uncontroverted by SFR.
Is there any proof in the record, and these cases all look kind of alike, so pardon me, but is there any proof of any notice before the HOA foreclosure sale that this deed of trust and note, or the note had, was a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac note? Was there any proof at all on that, any notice to anyone?
There's some indication in the record, Justice Pickering, about that, and the indication is, as Your Honor's indicated in the decision in Gooberland, and I think it was footnote 2, where you mentioned that it was some indication of notice to the world when the instrument that was employed was the Fannie Freddie uniform interest. That's on the first page of the
note. So it's the same thing as in those Judge Gordon decisions where there's the uniform document was used and it cross-references them?
The uniform document mentions them on the first page, and paragraph 20 of the document also says that it can be sold without notice also to the borrower, so the borrower understands then.
Do you know the record page for that?
The record page for that is in, it's Exhibit 501, so it starts at 3573, the Nevada Single Family Fannie Freddie Uniform Instrument with MERS. So they are incorrect about Monteith in that sense, and they also state toward the end, in trying to kind of...
Is your client recording... I'm sorry to interrupt you. But is your client... Does it have a policy of recording its interest in these?
Is it moving in that direction at all? Because I can see the point that SFR is making. There is no formal notice, and it goes beyond the HOA context. It can reach a second deed of trust and so forth, that there's this lurking federal foreclosure bar that may be triggered, but you don't know because the assignment's not recorded, so it's a cipher. And I always worry when we go parades of horribles, but it could create real havoc. Where somebody forecloses out a first deed of trust, they don't know, the second deed of trust has never given notice that it was acquired by somebody or assigned anyone. It's worrisome to me, and I was wondering if the agency is doing anything, if it's changed course. I know that Judge Gordon, in one of the footnotes in one of his orders, is encouraging the agency to take that step. Has that been done?
I'm unaware, Justice Pickering, of an action yet undertaken on the basis of what you're saying. I know that the agencies study extremely closely what your honors say, what judges like Judge Gordon say in the federal court, and I believe they consider in terms of their processes what needs to be done. I'm not presently aware, unfortunately, of a concrete step, Justice.
It's a very sound observation by him. I mean, it's very troubling that you're not giving notice and then you're relying on something. It's a puzzle.
We understand, Justice Pickering, and it's a fair question. I know the entities look very closely at what your justice is saying, what the federal court says, and I think it's also a fact, at least I've experienced it from my subjective view in the 4 years before your court on these different issues, that it has been kind of a slow rolling change, and as an issue rolls out, then you see people move in behind to backfill and try to fix that issue, and you know, it's just a process in terms of your honors articulating in 2014, this is how the statute works, this is how the notice works. We kind of try to make sure we understand how the notice works. And I know these federal entities are very deeply concerned with complying with court processes.
While we're on this, and I don't want to take you off your track too much, but would you agree with me that there's no textual basis to distinguish Berezovsky, which, and the federal statute that it construes? That statute, read according to Berezovsky, would apply equally to the scenario of a second deed of trust that the note had been assigned to Fannie Mae, not recorded, as it would to the HOA foreclosure lien. I don't see a basis to say it would be different in the HOA lien foreclosure from the foreclosing a first deed of trust where Fannie is on a second.
If I understand the question,
what I'm saying.
I think you're asking how absolute is the guarantee in the statute of the federal foreclosure bar? Is it as absolute as Berezovsky suggests? And I think, Justice Pickering, it is that absolute, and I think that Your Honor's in pristine view. You made that very clear, and you stated at the start of the decision, the federal foreclosure bar invalidates any purported extinguishment, and any is a very broad categorical absolute word, and that's how pristine view aligned with Berezovsky. And that, of course, was the first question Your Honor posed to all of us to try to be of assistance today, is do those two cases compel this result? Berezovsky is writ in that categorical language, and to Your Honor's question, so is Christine View. And that's why we think the answer to your first question is it does control today, and we understand the problem that your immediately prior question poses, Justice Pickering, and I'm sure it'll be studied further. But the federal...
But how do we deal with that? I mean, Ms. Gilbert's made that issue, and that concerns me that scenario, although we're not going to decide case 76858, but is your position is that for federal closure bar applies to second trustees, it applies all the way down the line, no matter what the federal agency owns?
And Justice Gibbons, you know, we didn't brief that all the way down because hopefully this case presents you a much narrower and easier one, and I'm not trying to dodge that more difficult question. We have not prepared to discuss the seconds and things because here in this case, going to the last colloquy with Justice Pickering and counsel, you said, I think it's fair, the only recordation statute we're really looking at here is 106.210. And on June 29th, 2012, our client complied with that because you see that the beneficial interest that was exercised on the time of the sale, which subsequently on June 24th...
And at the time of the original assignment, as I understand it, the predecessor version of 106.210 applied, which nobody argued, but... It's a permissive, not a mandatory. I mean, our statutes are flawed as well. I understand that.
And Justice Pickering, I was trying to go to the harder part of the argument to more fairly meet the substance. Absolutely. The court found that before the October 1, 2011 effective date in the judgment, which was a month or two before, DITEC was then already assigned that interest as the servicer, which I think gets you into the permissive version of the statute. But taking full-on, straight ahead, the October 1 version, if that applies, in paragraph 25 of the judgment, the court correctly discerned that the operative assignment of beneficial interest was recorded That was the one that was exercised on the day of the sale.
But it wasn't recorded when the HOA sale took effect. And so you have a question of how does this work? Did you need to record it in order to have that be a to invoke the federal foreclosure bar? Is that a requirement? I mean, you could have an unrecorded second deed of trust and a first deed of trust forecloses out against it. You wouldn't argue that the unrecorded second isn't foreclosed, would you? But you have to comply with state law.
You have to comply with state law, but put more starkly, the question that the discussion sort of poses is, could the Nevada legislature pass a law without violating the supremacy clause that undisclosed federal interests may freely be foreclosed in an NRS 116 sale?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where this discussion is going.
Or on a second deed of trust sale, let's take a... Could you do that?
Again, I mean, not to be defensive, not quite this case. I think that would be the most absolute reading of the federal foreclosure bar. I'm not here to say that that would not be done. I understand that when one takes it to the extreme of a more contingent motive secondary interest, that's a more extreme hypothetical. Here, we have a first position. We have compliance with what Your Honor's immediately last question to SFR said was the relevant recording statute. We have the court correctly finding and no one rebutting. There's no evidence rebutting that that interest that was exercised as power of sale on June 24, 2013 was in fact recorded compliant to 106.210. That was who exercised the power of sale. She's talking about what came after that. The statute doesn't talk about what happens after. It talks about the power of sale that was then exercised. And on June 24th, it was exercised by DITEC that got the assignment, as the court found, in which they've never disputed.
Right, but the HOA sale preceded that sale. And at the time of the HOA sale, the assignment was not of record, correct?
The assignment was not of record. At the time of the HOA sale, Fannie was already the owner. And so,
okay.
So Fannie was the owner in 2007, so the federal foreclosure bar should perforce attach.
But the assignment was, when was the assignment, when did the HOA foreclosure sale occur?
It was in 2012.
Okay, and when did Fannie Mae foreclose its interest?
Fannie Mae's interest was foreclosed by DITEC on its behalf on June 24, 2013.
Right, so at the time of the HOA foreclosure sale, the assignment to Fannie Mae was not of record.
The assignment to Fannie Mae became of, I see what you're saying, Your Honor. And they foreclosed without actual knowledge of the recordation of Fannie Mae's interest.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
But they wouldn't have obtained Fannie Mae's interest through the 106.210 process on June 24th because that recordation was of DITEC's interest. So whether it proceeded or followed, it would be kind of the same result. And the question is whether the Nevada legislature can pass a law in derogation of the federal foreclosure bar as to unstated federal interests, which is where the discussion kind of devolved at bottom, I believe.
Well, I mean, we can require recording of deeds of trust.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, I would agree with what I thought was the premise of your last question to SFR, which is that 106.210, you said, isn't it fair to say that's the one recording statute that matters? In this conversation, I agree with that, and it was complied with. That was the interest that was foreclosed. It was properly recorded a year before that sale. They had noticed.
But you're reading 106.210 is limited to exercising the power of sale. And I guess they're arguing that 106.210 requires recording of the assignment for the assignment to carry the effect as to...
Well, their entire argument is a bootstrap into running around the principle that, you know, absent owners of interest have to be present. I mean, it would take completely out of the question that you could ever have a nominee. It would destroy Monteith, and you would have to, Fannie would have to come in and individually foreclose. There would be no more use of independent contractors, and it would, they'd say nobody's going to do title insurance. I would say there's never going to again be a set of 2,000 or 3,000 home purchases like what happened 5 years ago in Nevada. That's never going to happen again. And the entire system of recordation shouldn't be turned upside down. And Fannie and Freddie's protection of the federal economy and literally half of the mortgage indebtedness in the U.S. 10 years ago, an important policy goal noted by all these courts, should not be made subservient to a historical event which is completely done and passed, which is this small number of homes bought 3 or 4 years ago by their clients. The system makes a lot of sense the way it was set up by the legislature and, frankly, the way Your Honors have applied it. And it doesn't need to be changed. They need it desperately to be changed greatly. They were wrong about Monteith. The security interest is there in Monteith. And it's this whole three-dimensional, two-dimensional thing. If I could briefly please speak to their simultaneous briefing. I mean, there's nothing more three-dimensional than being a secured creditor in a bankruptcy, right? It means you have pole position when the cars line up at the start of the bankruptcy. You're a creditor, what? In relation to other creditors, right? I mean, it's not some two-dimensional thing. You know, I have a debt with respect to the debtor. I'm a creditor who's secured, meaning I stand in front of the unsecured creditors and perhaps other secured creditors, depending on status and timing. That is redolent with three-dimensionality. And when Your Honors wrote that opinion, what happened in that case was you were talking about what they consider to be a three-dimensional model, and they're just basically asking you to reconceive it by talking about that metaphorically. Your Honors have not asked questions posed to some of the other issues more at the periphery of the briefing. They were not surprised by the fifth supplemental disclosure statement in the case. They already, you know, had the testimony of Curcio. They were told years in advance what was going to happen. They've litigated these things over and over. I think someone said these cases all have the same names. They all have the same titles. It's kind of like Alien versus Predator. You have the same six actors in every single case for about 100 cases in a row. They know Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae knows them. These people and litigants know each other. They knew what the testimony was to be. There was no abuse of discretion in the way the district court handled the matter. And if Your Honors follow in the steps that you've been treading very wisely in Christine View and in Guberlin, then we would respectfully suggest that you would affirm here.
Can you, a three-judge panel, in my view, can't go at odds with an en banc opinion of our court. So do you see any difference between this case and Christine View that we should concern ourselves with?
We do not, and recognizing that Guberlin is a three-judge panel, I believe, and say three justices in this panel, you were correctly discerning the nature of the law as comprised by Berezovsky and Christine View. We don't see the distinctions here, and we don't see any reason to radically reinvent for the reasons my somewhat animated remarks a couple minutes ago were tending toward. We think there's nothing different here, Justice Pickering.
Thank you.
May I please yield the extra 20 seconds to Mr. Johnson?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Now it's down to 17.
Thank you, Your Honors.
He gets the additional. Sorry.
Thank you, Justice Pickering, Justice Gibbons, Justice Hardesty. It's my pleasure to be before the court. My client and I both appreciate the opportunity for me to appear as an amicus on behalf of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. The question before the court is whether Fannie Mae had a cognizable property interest, and it did. It did under Montier, and to hold that it didn't, this court would have to overrule Montier, which I agree, Justice Pickering, as a panel, it can't do. Montier has a very interesting discussion in it about whether the interest in that case, where the record beneficiary of the deed of trust was not the same entity as the owner of the mortgage. So this is the situation we're talking about in Montier. One party owns the note. Another party appears in the title records as the beneficiary of the deed of trust. Same setup in this case. The en banc court in Montier said, an unrecorded deed is valid immediately between the mortgagor and the mortgagee. In Nevada, perfection of a deed of trust occurs upon proper execution and recordation. So perfection and recordation are the same in Nevada law. And then to make it clear, the en banc court said, thus, a security interest attaches to the property as between the mortgagor and the mortgagee upon execution and as against third parties upon recordation. I think we agree on all of that. The part that my friend Ms. Gilbert left out, or de-emphasized actually, she didn't mention it but didn't circle back, is that the Montier Court held that Deutsche Bank's interest, says, the security interest attached and was perfected before bankruptcy. That means, because in Nevada, perfection occurs upon proper execution and recordation, the court held that the recordation of the deed of trust with MERS as the beneficiary was a valid perfection. So when Deutsche Bank had the deed of trust recorded in its representative's name, MERS, it complied with the recordation statutes. There was no unrecorded interest at play in Montier. It was a recorded interest. And the court held the interest was perfected under Nevada's statutory recordation scheme. So recording in the name of an agent or another contractually authorized representative doesn't create an unrecorded interest. It creates a properly recorded and perfected interest.
What do you say to 106.210? And let's assume, for purposes of that question, we're dealing with the 2011 version of.
Well, I say exactly what the court in Montier said, which is that 106.210 deals with how we treat unrecorded interests. What happens if there's an unrecorded interest? Is it void? Is it enforceable? Is it unenforceable? The court says in footnote 3, based on the conclusions in this opinion, it is not necessary for us to address the party's arguments regarding NRS 106.210. What the court is saying there, I believe, is that because we've already held that the interest was validly recorded, it was perfected, and perfection equals recordation. Because it was perfected, meaning it was validly recorded.
But there wasn't this intercession of an interest that could invalidate, say, second and first deed of trust. That's easier for me. There wasn't. It didn't come with the ability to say, we're going to destroy the lien ahead of us because nobody can foreclose against us once Fannie Mae is the assignee. That notice issue is of concern, and I wonder whether 106.210 applies. I'm sorry to eat your time.
No, it's the court's time as much as mine, and so I appreciate that. But there are three points I would like to make on that. First, it is not correct that the federal foreclosure bar wipes out any interest senior to the conservator's protected property interest. If the conservator holds a second lien, it does not wipe out the first lien. It only means that if the first lien holder can still foreclose, it just would convey the property subject to the second lien.
Right, and I misspoke in that. I get that. But the person who's buying it thinks they're getting the property for paying off the first, and it comes with the second attached, and they don't have notice that that second is coming with it.
Well, Your Honor, I think partly that's because SFR in these cases, by its own behavior, clearly wasn't aggrieved by the absence of Fannie's name appearing in the record. It was aggrieved by not knowing about the federal foreclosure bar. Because anyone who knows the mortgage market knows that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are the entities whose interests are protected in this circumstance, own probably the majority and at least a substantial fraction of all mortgages. We saw the deed of trust in this case expressly mentions Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. A prudent person in that circumstance would have gone to FHFA and said, I know about this statute. If you have an interest, I know I need your consent. Do you have an interest? And if you do, will you consent? They never did that in all the hundreds of properties they bought. So their complaint really is that they didn't know about the statute. And their remedy is with Congress. Congress didn't protect Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It protected the conservatorship.
And so the basis under which we would impose on the HOA foreclosure is reading the deed of trust form and assuming that the form creates a interest in Fannie Mae. Is that it? The really pragmatic problem for me is the way I recall the federal foreclosure bar, it's a matter of an issue of consent. It's not an absolute bar. The consent can be given, so the process about requesting consent is important. And how do you request consent if you don't even know that they're there? So the answer you supply is look at the form.
Now, the
is that it?
No, Your Honor. I think a prudent operator in any kind of residential property market would be well aware that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could have an interest. Remember, the restatement authorizes the rule that we advocate, which is not, by the way, the traditional rule. The traditional rule is if you've got the note, you've got the right to foreclose. We agree the note and the deed of trust can be separated. It's just under the restatement, it has to be really, really, really clear that that's what the parties meant to do. You can do it if you want to, but it doesn't make sense, and it would destroy the secondary market if that were the default rule. And so the policies that underlie the restatement which are that unless the parties express a very clear intent to separate the two, courts should be vigorous in finding this agent or contractually authorized representative relationship and preserve that unity between the mortgage, the deed of trust and the note really applies here. And a party should go to FHFA. And FHFA didn't have any obligation.
But there's a written policy that they will not consent in HOA foreclosures. I don't know if there is one for first deed of trust foreclosures, but isn't there a written statement that they will not consent on?
Yes, there is. There absolutely is, Your Honor. And that's a valid decision. A valid statement of the agency's perspective on it. Now, that, of course, came after and in response to expressions of concern by parties like SFR. And, by the way, in more recent days, people do come to FHFA and say, we're looking at foreclosing on these HOA properties.
Just to refresh my memory, when was that policy announced? Mr. Johnson, do you recall? I won't hold you to it because it's both our memories, but...
I know, I don't want to guess, but I know it's been some years. I want to say 2015 or 16.
Yeah.
So it was after this court's SFR decision.
Right.
Or the en banc court's
right. SFR. So prior to that time, and certainly as applicable to the dates involved in this transaction, no such policy existed, right?
Right, so a party who knew about the statute, who understood, as all citizens are presumed to understand.
But it takes me back to the point that I was making before. How does an HOA, you put this in the context of a sophisticated buyer or someone who's looking at making the purchases of all these properties, but a lot of these HOAs are not particularly sophisticated. How does an HOA know about Fannie Mae and whether it should secure their consent when there's no indication on the record that they have an interest other than a form, deed of trust, using that language?
The statute, which protects all of Fannie
Mae. The statute. Which statute?
The Federal Foreclosure Bar statute, which protects all interests of the conservator, period, absent consent.
Well, right, but it still requires, I think, an ability or affords an ability to someone to seek consent.
And that ability is always there. Mm-hmm. Everyone has the right to contact FHFA. They've got an address.
Why do I have to seek your consent if I don't know about you?
Because Congress said so.
Uh-huh.
And the remedy.
Well, good day. Let's take a look at this. I was hoping Mr. Jacobs would address this, but maybe you would, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Gilbert started her argument by suggesting that you all had acknowledged, maybe you didn't, but that Mr. Jacobs' client acknowledged that under 4617J3, the holding of a note is not a property interest under Nevada law.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that, and I think Edelstein actually makes that very clear. What Edelstein says, and this is important because it lets us talk about that field of consistent decisions that Ms. Gilbert referenced, and I'd like to explain how Edelstein, Leyva, and Montier fit together. But
why'd you do that?
Well, I will. So, and let me do that, and then I'll circle back to the specific question mm-hmm. you asked.
We'll give you additional time.
Of course. So we're talking about who owns the note and who is the record beneficiary of the deed of trust. And we want to look at the different scenarios of matching and not matching. If the same party has always been the owner of the note and the record beneficiary of the deed of trust, it's an easy case. That entity has the right to foreclose and maintains a property interest. I think we all agree on that. No one could dispute it. If Bank A writes the loan and immediately records the deed of trust, it's got an interest in the collateral property. When we look at Edelstein, we're looking at, again, at the time of foreclosure, same entity owns the note that appears as record beneficiary of the deed of trust, but it wasn't always that way. In between, someone else appeared in the record as the deed of trust beneficiary, but the interest got reunified. in the words of Edelstein. And what Edelstein says is, in that case, the owner of the loan, the owner of the note, who is currently the record beneficiary of the deed of trust, has a property interest and the right to foreclose. Now, to answer Justice Pickering's question, what does that mean about the owner of the note's interest in the meantime, during the time someone else showed up as the record beneficiary of the deed of trust? They certainly had an interest in the property because they ended up being able to foreclose, and all it took to be able to foreclose was what this court described in Montierth as a ministerial act. So I don't know whether Nevada would call that a contingent interest, a limited interest, a partial interest, but the owner of the note has rights as to the party that no one else has. The right to foreclose if it takes an assignment of the deed of trust. Remember, if they assign the deed of trust to someone else who doesn't own the note, that party has no obligation to enforce, so they can't foreclose. So the note holder does have interests that are different from the rest of the world as to the property, even if they don't have the right to foreclose in a scenario where there's a real split between the ownership of the note and the status of record beneficiary of the deed of trust. So we've got the easy case, same parties, always the same parties, property interest, right to foreclose. The slightly harder case, Edelstein, where there was some sort of separation, but a reunification. So at the relevant time, note owner is record beneficiary of the deed of trust. They've got a property interest and a right to foreclose. That's the holding of Edelstein. Now we get to the interesting cases, the ones that are on display here. What happens when the owner of the note and the record beneficiary of the deed of trust are not the same party? Well, Leyva tells us that if there's no relationship between the two, then there's no right to foreclose. Now, that doesn't mean no property interest, because the note owner could take an assignment if they had the right to or if they wanted to pay for it. So they still have some rights as to the collateral that no one else has, but they don't have a, what we might call, fully secured first priority interest. That issue was dealt with in Montierth. In Montierth, one party owns the note, someone else appears as record beneficiary of the deed of trust, but the someone else isn't a stranger. It's the note owner's authorized representative. And Montierth says, in that circumstance, the deed of trust has been executed and perfected, and the owner of the note is a secured creditor. It quotes a case. These aren't...
Right, you need to be mindful of your time.
I am, Your Honor. The court cites a case describing the note owner's interest as that of a fully secured first priority creditor. And that means taking priority over other third parties.
Do you have any other questions?
No, I just think that the point about Montierth is that as long as there's a connection between the deed of trust and the note holder, you shouldn't be subjugating the priority of the deed of trust to other interests simply because of the separation.
I think I agree with that, but that's what we've got.
You should.
Where Congress...
It maybe wasn't stated very well, but you should agree with that.
I always try. And here, Congress gave some extra priority to the conservatorship's interests. And if there is a problem with what Congress did, the remedy is in Congress.
Thank you. Could you add 8 minutes to Ms. Gilbert's time, please?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to correct something that I may have misspoken, Justice Hardesty. I think I said that at the time that the GSE, if they got the note, they have the note that may be their property, and it may be protected under 4617J3. Remember, the note is simply a right to repayment. They can go after the borrower any day they want. What they can't do is use preemption to find a property interest. If it was so easy to take these cases and mesh them together, how come they didn't even mention Leyva and Edelstein in their brief. They didn't even talk about it. Yet that is the law in Nevada. What I hear from my good friend is that once the deed of trust is signed, it's been perfected and it works. The relationship is there. That's true. They can go after the borrower anytime they want for that. And they can have, and once they have an assignment of the deed of trust, they can go after the borrower's property. But property doesn't attach. There is no attachment to that property. And attachment is what matters. There's no attachment to the property, the house, the right to go after it, unless it's recorded. They're saying, well, it is recorded, and we have this agency relationship. You can't use contract and agency laws to displace the recording statutes. They say we can't upturn the recording statutes. This is how we do it with MERS. This is how we've chosen to do it with MERS. MERS upended the recording statutes, Your Honor. It's how they've chosen to do it. And just because this is how they do it and this is how they always did it doesn't make it smart. What happens is they have a right to hold that deed of trust or give that deed of trust by assignment to someone else. And that person has it. And then they have to assign it back. But until it's assigned back, it's not property of the agency. Mr. Johnson talked about the case law that you cited in Montier. Let me be clear. I believe that's the Corley case out of the bankruptcy court in Georgia. The law in Georgia, because they look to the state law in Georgia for property, you can't split the deed of trust and note. It's legal impossibility under Georgia law. And Georgia is a mortgage state. The mortgagor doesn't even have title. So if you take the deed and transfer it to somebody, the note goes with it under Georgia law. The other case that's relied on in Montier, in Marie Martinez, relies on Kansas bankruptcy and Kansas law. Kansas law since 1899 has been the traditional rule. Those cases don't support Nevada law. They just don't support it. Montier is a narrow exception. We talked about that. You recognize that a third party's interest can intervene. The restatement says it. The restatement in its introduction says, we're not talking here about recording statutes, which can trump what we say here. Section 54, comment B, 5.4, comment B. The person who wins, the third party, because of an unrecorded interest. You can't set aside the recording statutes. They don't have a property.
What recording statute, though, are they asking you to set aside?
They're asking us to set aside the recording statutes that tells you who has an interest in the property. Who has an interest in
so
the property?
So you're
who
saying 106.210?
Pardon me?
Are you relying on 106.210?
Yes, Your Honor, and virtually every recording statute we have. If you want to have an interest, because if you don't record it, it is void as to a third party. And what I'm saying is Congress said property is defined by Nevada law. They keep talking about the federal foreclosure bar and preemption. They can't do that. The first thing they have to do is find property. And they don't have the deed of trust.
Well, it does seem, Ms. Gilbert, that your original argument and the argument you're making now is asking this panel to either clarify or perhaps revisit Montier altogether.
Your Honor, I would encourage the court to revisit Montier, but I would ask it to be limited to its facts and to its context. That's what I'm asking. I understand the purpose of Montier in the bankruptcy situation, and what is the purpose of doing this constructive
reunification? But Mr. Jacobs makes an important point. Even though it arises in the bankruptcy context, the priority of the creditors, all of the creditors, interests involved in that bankruptcy are determined at the time the bankruptcy is filed. So that is an important piece of that analysis. I don't know that that necessarily limits the Monteith holding, because it's establishing the priority of that deed of trust at the time of the filing of the bankruptcy. The fact that there was a subsequent assignment to the note holder wasn't influencing the priority of that deed of trust as against other creditors.
And, Your Honor, in Monteith, there was no priority fight. We don't know what would have happened if somebody would have come in a priority fight. There was no priority fight. And what we had was not somebody sitting on their rights, somebody who was actively trying to enforce it and understood it had to assign. It understood Nevada law. We gave them an exception.
So I'm grateful for this oral argument, but in part because I think your position's been clarified to me, but I did not recognize in your briefs that you were asking this court to clarify or revisit Monteith.
Your Honor, what I was asking?
So I wasn't really alerted to that coming in today.
I can see that, Your Honor. What I would say is that our brief, I think, was very, what we were looking for was don't extend Monteith beyond what you've got, which is a creditor-debtor, no priority fight, because we don't know what would happen on that, and that you're looking to who has standing to foreclose. Just because you reunited those constructively doesn't mean that they owned the deed of trust. That would have had to happen through assignment. You can't use the laws of agency and contract to intervene where you have said there is no attachment to third parties. There's no property interest. 111.325, if you don't record your interest, where you're trying to come in on a third party's rights, you have no property there to assert. It's void. That's the word in the statute, void. Doesn't exist, never did. They keep going to the remedy. You have to look to the property. Congress put property under Nevada law. To change it, to alter Nevada law to meet their wants and desires, is just not what Congress intended. You can look at the Amalgam case we cited, restoration finance, both of those. You take the law as you find it. And Congress knew how to change Nevada law and change state law if it wanted to. It did it with the statute of limitations.
So could you address Mr. Johnson's point in his rather lengthy discussion, and I'm not being critical of Mr. Johnson. I invited that and wanted him to provide that discussion. But as he, I think, aptly points out, there's been an evolution of how you deal with these separations of the note and the deed of trust. This case raises the more difficult question of when that separation occurs and there's been an intervening event, in this case an HOA foreclosure. His response to that, and I don't think that it's driven by the federal foreclosure bar, I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is what happens to the property law. Edelstein implied if she's separated at the time of the foreclosure, then that's a problem. He suggests that there is a connection here between the note holder and the deed of trust.
And, Your Honor, again, as you recognized in Monteith.
And if we could just add to this, the record in this case indicates that that was so.
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay.
I would take issue with that.
Would you?
If you go to page 17 of our supplemental brief, I can tell you, MERS, Greentree, affidavit of authority to record the notice of default, stating under penalty of perjury that Greentree was the current holder of the note, current beneficiary of record, and failed to include Fannie in the list of other known prior beneficiaries, whether of record or not. If they want to be the beneficiary of the deed of trust and own the deed of trust, they have to be a beneficiary, and they were not disclosed.
What was that record site? Do you have that again?
Yes, Your Honor. That's page 17 of our supplemental brief.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in volume 16, pages 3605 to 3608 of the record. We had letters in this case sent from Miles Bowers to SFR, or to the NAS, saying that BAC Home Loans represents MERS and is the creditor with the right to repayment. They're the servicer, not Greentree. I mean, there's all sorts of hidden people in here.
So you're saying that the DITEC declaration
is false.
I was going to say misrepresents the ownership, but that's a more direct way of putting it. Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, because if they want to claim an ownership property, they have to be on record. If they want to say to a third party, then they have to be on record. And here's why, Your Honor, and here's why it's separate, because it didn't attach at the time.
Is there anything in the record to suggest that SFR's review of the declaration caused them not to investigate Fannie Mae's ownership of this note?
If I may, Your Honor?
With the permission of Justice Pickering.
I will tell you, this goes to the footer on the bottom of the mm-hmm. the deed of trust. We have testimony in this case at volume 13, 3150, that that's just a, no, SFR wouldn't, because that is simply a form. And as an example, in case 63078 in this court, volume 1, page 65 of the record, the SFR v. U.S. Bank case, you'll recall, was an $800,000 deed of trust, which Fannie would never have, was on a uniform instrument. So I don't think that uniform instrument has anything to do, any notice, any inquiry notice. And just because they say they own all these things doesn't mean that we have to go look for them. They have a duty under Nevada law to record, to protect, to have a property interest. Not for notice, to have a property interest, to protect under this remedy. And if they don't do it, it's gone. If somebody intervenes, they leave it in MERS or somebody else at their own peril, Your Honor. I think we've briefed the other issues. I would ask that this court reverse, because there is nothing in this record to allow it to affirm.
Thank you very much in this matter.